drank beer. He had one beer at the party and had beers with, and having some beers with friends, or just to meet up and have some beers. Drinking beer, which I gladly do. I like
you
beer.
You have an answer that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like
Judge.
To drink?
It is Friday, September 28, 2018. Another week off the rails in the United States of America. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Think we're a little all exhausted today, folks. Just so you know, yes, this was the week Christine Blasey Ford gave a gut-wrenching testimony about her experience being sexually assaulted by Brett Kavanaugh yesterday. Literally had to stop my car at one point. I was listening to that. Kavanaugh rips off the mask and shows himself to be the asshole political operative that he's always been. Trump loved the performance. Gives Kavanaugh the big thumbs up, tells the world, that's why I nominated the guy. The Senate Judiciary Committee is set to vote this morning. We may have the update while we're recording this morning, actually. So we'll try to include that discussion. Twitter is going freaking nuts. Procedural vote. If he is voted out of committee, which that's the expectation, there's a procedural vote that is set for Saturday around noon for a full confirmation vote of the Senate next week. As Mitch McConnell said, they're just going to plow right through this and get him on the Supreme Court. There are some sources, however, saying that the GOP may need Mike Pence to get down and vote for confirmation. We'll see about that. The Pennsylvania focus, Alex, I'll take conflicts of interest for 1,000. Scott Wagner caught investing campaign funds into the stock market. And lost it. Well, at least 630,000 of it. That happened this summer. How about that? Wagner, man. He's smart, that guy.
I'm smart enough to, form my own opinion.
Yep, but my own opinion gets 600 grand plus in the toilet. Internal polling now shows Pennsylvania Republicans are running for the hills. Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman is polling at 45-45. With his opponent. What? That's right. Senate Appropriations Chair Pat Brown is trailing an R Revolution and PCCC. That's not DCCC. This is progressive campaign. What was it? Congressional Campaign Committee? Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, PCCC. Anyways, it's R Revolution and PCCC back candidate Mark Pinsley. And Brown is trailing by 11 points. And if that's not bad enough, Susan Wild, well, bad enough for them. Susan Wild is starting to pull away in the 7th Congressional District. That's amazing. That's Lehigh Valley, folks. Lehigh Valley. Susan Wild pulling away. Latest Franklin and Marshall poll shows that Tom Wolf, he's lapping Scott Wagner. Barely breaking a sweat. He's lapping Scott Wagner 52-30 in the polls right now. That's right. Wagner folks say the race is tightening, just like we said it would. Interesting definition of tightening.
The noose.
Yeah. Yeah, the noose. And it turns out, and this was painful, Wawa is all in for Scott Wagner. Sean Kitchen, once again, posting it to Twitter, causing a ruckus, forcing me to change my morning commute route. Clear of Wawa. And Kutztown University faculty and students tabled to expose unhealthy buildings, particularly in Lytle Hall. New accounts out from KU Mold Hunter on Twitter and Facebook. Why don't you follow KU Mold Hunter on Twitter and Facebook and tell your stories, see what's happening. Today's last call, Free Will has got Cezanne Saturday tomorrow. And not only some new Saison releases, but a new can release tomorrow. I talked about a little bit about that. They also have got their Crowler machine up and running finally. A lot of us have been waiting for that one. Japan lands two small hopping probes on an asteroid. That's the first time in human history that they successfully landed probes on an asteroid. And actually, to be honest with you, I have a ton of really cool space news this week, but I'm too freaking exhausted after yesterday's hearing. So we'll get to some of that stuff next week. Sean will have some updates on things in Harrisburg, I guess. We'll see. Want to remind everybody, what's that?
Maybe.
We're all a little dragging today. Sean's going to tell us a little about where he's headed to today, too, as well. Tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Want to remind everybody, one, if we want a progressive future, if we want to stop the madness, if we want to get the train back on the tracks, or how about this? How about just start building the new tracks and go in a different direction? That's kind of what I'm in favor of. Well, we need progressive media. And you can support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button on the right sidebar. 2018 midterm elections are literally like right around the corner. And we need to make sure that we're on the ground. We got the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way to do that, become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. So, Sean, man, I'm wiped out, literally wiped out after the hearings yesterday.
So this is going to be pessimistic me starting off the show.
There you go. Sean, you're usually such a bundle of unicorns, flowers, and confetti, but please do tell.
Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better over the next couple months. And
I think you're right.
It's by a lot worse as I see this nomination going through. I see Election Day coming, and I see Democrats. I see the blue wave, for all intents and purposes, it looks like it's going to happen now. Just completely wiping out the gains Republicans made since the wildly gerrymandered maps came into play in 2012 all across the country. I see Democrats wiping those maps out. I see Democrats taking back thousands, almost hundreds of seats on the state, local, national levels. But I also see the Republicans completely mucking up the works in the lame duck period. And if anything was evident yesterday, it was Lindsey Graham's tirade.
Yeah.
Basically saying that the Republicans will do anything they can to hold on to power or to pretty much fuck things up after the elections and yes. Before the next Congress is in office.
Yep.
I think that's the feeling I got from yesterday. It was
look, here's what happened. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And let me talk about Lindsey Graham's thing for a second, because remember that the way that these hearings were set up, and we'll get into some of the specifics of the hearings in a minute, but the way that the hearings were set up, right, because all the Republicans, right, were all guys, very on the pasty side of things, right? They were all guys. They said, oh, this doesn't look good. The optics are bad. So we're going to bring in a woman so that we can hide behind her skirts, right, and let her do the dirty work.
Aunt Lydia.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to put her out there so that she can be the prosecutor, right? And so it was weird, right? Because, I mean, just strange to begin with. You got, the panel of, white GOP guys sitting there basically with their arms crossed and Chuck Grassley grabbing snacks every once in a while, right? And then you've got this prosecutor brought in to question Christine Blasey Ford.
And this is one of the biggest acts of cowardice I've ever seen, because it's not like it's, but not by Blasey Ford, I thought, but by the prosecutor and the way they set it up.
No, absolutely right.
It was such a huge act of cowardice because they didn't have the balls to pretty much ask their own questions, so they submitted these questions to this prosecutor, and the prosecutor couldn't answer up any follow up questions because like for context or anything like that, because she wasn't the one drafting the questions.
Right. But I would say this, I wouldn't say not even just cowardice. I mean, this is the thing is like their time in the sun has got them so boxed in that they've got almost zero options. Right. Because they think the thing is, look, there's all guys there. Right. And they've basically shown this is like, look, this is the cabal, right?
The country club
of white male, right? Privilege, white male, kind of like reactionaryism. And there it is, right? I mean, we've talked about this before. It's like the Republican Party has basically become like the party of white identity, white male identity, especially. Right. And with all that implies, and that doesn't mean that there's not women there. It means that that particular structure of patriarchy, right, is being so concentrated, right? They're desperately trying to hold on to it's concentrated in that party, and they've got no place to go. It's not like they could have said, hey, you know what? Maybe we should get some women senators on the Judiciary Committee to do some of these questioning, right? So how many they got to pick from, right? You know, it's like,
I was gonna say, what female senators do they have?
Yeah, and you know you're not going to put – Susan Collins isn't going to sit on that committee and ask those questions because her whole election is dependent on it.
And another thing is this. Susan Collins has a really tough choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan Collins, just like Jeff Flake, who like this resistance, hashtag the resistance is propped up for speaking out against Trump and, you know, grandstanding against Trump and – showing him that he's some moderate Republican, Jeff Flake's voting for Brett Kavanaugh. I can almost guarantee you that Susan Collins is going to be voting for Brett Kavanaugh after this. And just because it's because this is what the political party wants. I don't see her voting against Kavanaugh on Saturday. Well,
the only question left for me is like what kind of freaking perverted and kind of like ridiculous explanation is she going to use to try to cover what she's been doing?
I mean,
the one thing that Collins has been really good about doing, right? I mean, she has been basically able to cover her ass, right? Even though that she's the pro-choice Republican who has voted consistently to kind of limit kind of women's access to abortion, right? She has been kind of lock and step with the majority of the kind of Republicans kind of war on women, but she's been able to frame it in such a way that's been able to convince enough voters in Maine, right, that she's actually kind of pro-choice and moderate, right? But I don't see where does she go from here? How does she kind of even address that? I don't think she can.
No, and the thing is, it's like Kavanaugh has called contraception, birth control, abortion medicine, abortion-inducing medicine. I mean, like, you knew what was going to happen if you didn't vote for Clinton, and you sat out the election, or you voted for Jill Stein.
No, right. I mean, let's take that pause right now. Let's all say it together, everybody. Remember, elections have consequences, right? This right now, what we're seeing is exactly this. These are the kinds of consequences, right? So I'm glad that there's people out there that feel like they've kept their moral self intact. But this is what that it gets you. Right. So as much as it might have been like turn the stomach of some people to kind of like vote for Hillary Clinton, right, because they so disagreed with some of her policies and stuff like that. This is what it gets us. And that is not
this is why I voted for Clinton.
Because this is the freaking system that we're in and it sucks. Sorry.
I know. This is why I voted for Clinton. This this Gorsuch and Kavanaugh are the reasons why I voted for Clinton. The only reason. And I don't know if that was like not enough of a motivating factor for some people not to vote for Clinton, but this is it. Like this is, I mean, you're seeing it now. Like you got these Jimmy Dore fucking people out there. Yeah.
I know. Exactly. Right. Like, as they say on the Majority Report, the dumb, dumb left.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's the best way of framing it. The dumb, dumb left. Right. And I think that just drives me crazy. And again, I am not sitting here blaming everything on the left. Right. I'm not all the kind of just those people. So before you start throwing on your kind of capes of victimhood. Right. That's not what we're talking about here. We're saying we got to get smart about politics. And I'll say this. I didn't vote for Clinton. I voted for Clinton. But I'm saying I didn't vote just because of one issue. right? I voted because of political strategy, right? I know the fact is that there is an opportunity to push Hillary Clinton if there's enough political organizing in there. Does that mean I think that she's going to come around and she's going to be the Democratic Socialist? Hell no. Right. But the thing is that she has enough commitment and there's enough about the Democratic base that there's an opportunity to hold her accountable. There is none of that opportunity right now, as we're seeing. And the fact that you've got a Supreme Court nominee in Brett Kavanaugh, who basically could like go to a hearing and basically like unleash, right, this kind of like
drunken rage.
Yeah, right-wing Trumpian rage, right? As part of the hearing, and that being
on
kind of
female senators too.
Yeah, it unbelievable.
Like, I got to watch most of the Christine Blasey Ford part of the hearing.
Yeah,
I did not get to see most of the Kavanaugh hearing. I went out last night. Pretty thankful I missed the majority of that hearing because I would have blown my head off, like my head would have just like exploded, like from rage. But like, I couldn't believe when I got back in last night, the exchange that he had with Senator Klobuchar
is
like the I mean, like there were some parts of that where it's well documented that he had a drinking problem. Like blackout drunk every day of the week in high school and college. Mm-hmm. I mean, tons of people, his old roommates, his friends, people he associated with, all came out and said this guy is blackout drunk throughout high school and college. But they weren't invited to testify. They weren't invited to speak to the FBI. Like, how could you remember raping someone if you were blackout drunk?
No, and for example, so and yet, like, I mean, there's that. Let's even put it that way, right? What if it's not what? Well, several of the senators also kind of said, because he kept on focusing on that idea about blackout, right? And then several of them said, well, what about having difficulty remembering, right? To try to saying like, okay, instead of this specific term, are you hiding behind that? Then he would say, you're talking about blackout. And he would like insist upon this one particular term, right? And it's because he was coached on that. He said, you need to avoid all this stuff. You need to be able to respond to these things. And the fact that when one of the senators asked him, basically, I think it was, I don't know,
Feinstein. Either,
maybe Feinstein or maybe it was Durbin. I can't remember which one, but say how many, like, so you said sometimes you've had a few too many beers. What is a few too many in your mind? And he had such difficulty answering that. And he ended up with, whatever it says on the chart. And people are kind of looking at him. He's like, you know, the chart, the blood alcohol content chart. And so it's like.
And it's actually that the blood alcohol content chart for someone who probably weighs his size, his weight is like three beers will have you legally over the limit. You might personally feel like you're sober and you could converse still and stuff like that. But like three beers, like 6% alcohol, that's when you hit that legally drunk point in most states.
Right. And, like, you know, and I ironically, it's like he sits there, he says that, right? Then there's no way in hell, right? Given what you see, given what you hear about what even, you know, his people in his dorm, his, you know, even some of his friends from back then basically say, no, you know, he drank regularly. There's no way you're telling me that the guy kind of stopped at like 2.5 beers. Right. So by his own admission that basically he's had a few too many beers like regularly. Right. Because he would not answer that question because he was so worried that if he said oh, a few too many, you know, like eight. Right. And then be like, well, eight. And then there'd be all the discussion. So he's boxed into a corner. Right? He was coached with about four answers for the entire hearing. And that's all he could do. I like beer. That was one of them. Yes, I like beer. You like beer. That was one of them. The other one was like the four people who she says that were there have written and basically said that they didn't know anything about it and they weren't there, which that turns out wasn't even true. Right. Yeah. We kept on going back to his, you know, he kept on talking about his, I'm forgetting her last name. So basically Christine Blasey Ford's friend who was there. The other woman that she said was the girl, I should say, who was at that party. She had basically her lawyer had sent her had sent in a statement saying that she didn't know Brett Kavanaugh, right? And then it turns out that once that woman, or now woman, realized what the lawyer had sent, she got in touch with Christine Blasey Ford and basically apologized and said that she had really bad health situation. She was in a had a really bad health situation and she just couldn't deal with it. And she asked his lawyer just to make it go away. And, but she's basically said she supported her and she would apologize for that statement. And so when that's when you had for Kamala Harris, last question that she asked Kavanaugh on the end, said, did you watch her testimony, Ford's testimony? And he says no. So it could have benefited him if he did, because then he would have realized that that statement, everything he was like basing everything on, was kind of like already put into question during her testimony. But I don't know. I just it really was kind of off the rails. And I want to step back a little bit and just kind of say, you know, you think about the whole structure of this, right? So Christine Blasey Ford, she has to testify first. She was, I mean, frankly, I don't know how she got through that entire hearing. That was kind of amazing. I mean, it was gut-wrenching hearing her describe her experience with that, right? And this is some of the value of actually having the direct testimony as opposed to just statements, because then it makes you confront the fact that it's not just like these acts, but it's the meaning of those things. And it makes it very difficult just to kind of, I don't know, pigeonhole her as some sort of abstraction of a victim of sexual assault. Now you have to see the human cost that that has in the way that she describes it. So, yeah. I mean, she was amazing. I mean, she was just, amazing. And I can only imagine what she's had to go through, not just in the assault, but through this hearing. So I don't know. The one thing I want to do, I want to just kind of say, this is one of the things. Now, if people are unfamiliar with Kavanaugh, I can't imagine that. Well, and if you're listening to this podcast, chances are, you know, about the guy's background. And this guy has basically been, before he got put on the court, on the district court, this guy was, had been a political operative, right? A right wing political operative. He had worked for Ken Starrs in the prosecution of Bill Clinton. He had actually, the investigations into Bill Clinton. He was worked at the George Bush White House and was basically the guy who stood between every piece of information and every messaging that was kind of coming in and George W. Bush. He was the guy who screened all that stuff and kind of fed him the information that they wanted, that the right people wanted.
I was going to say, he also clerked for a extremely misogynistic district judge out in Western United States who had a background of sexually harassing female staffers. And this is another thing that Dianne Feinstein, I think, dropped the ball on, where people were trying to make this an issue during the hearings, you know, as on background, where, again, a lawyer who blew the whistle on Kaczynski sent a letter to Feinstein's office and to Grassley's office stating that there are many federal employees, female employees, who worked under Kavanaugh and Kaczynski at the time, who were extremely concerned by Kavanaugh being appointed to the Supreme Court. This was a letter that was sent to Feinstein and Grassley's office back in July.
Yep.
You know, another issue that could have been made public, but never was. And if, you know, Dr. Ford wanted to stay anonymous, but, you know, like, this is something that again, another character issue that could have been brought up during the actual nomination hearing.
Yep. I mean, it's crazy. I just saw this come up, and, you know, saw that there's a leading Catholic magazine, right, is basically retract its endorsement of Kavanaugh now. And he says, quote, no longer in the best interest of this country. Well, that's a good thing.
It looks like, I don't know if they voted yet. I'm not paying attention, but it looks like they're going to go through now with Jeff Flake supporting Kavanaugh in the committee. So,
yeah, if we seem a little distracted at times here today, it's not just that Sean is having fun on Twitter. It's because we're paying some attention to the latest news that's breaking today. I mean, there's all sorts of, things are happening really, really fast right now. So,
and I mean, if you're Rod Rosenstein, at least you keep your job for another week.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So let me just say one, add the one more piece when I'm talking about Kavanaugh's background, right? He's also one of these guys who came out of the Federalist Society, right? One thing that's been kind of a little bit lost, it broke some news initially, but Amy Chua, who is a professor at Yale Law School, right? She and her husband, she's the one who wrote that kind of like Tiger Mamas or whatever it was, right? And she got kind of quasi famous on this, but she was basically, she would advise, and this was disgusting to me to begin with, right? She would advise female law students who would potentially want to clerk for Kavanaugh, basically how to dress and how to look, right? Because they were aware that Kavanaugh had a type. Right. So, you know, you see even this, right, just the kind of the background of like his particular approach. So yesterday in the hearing, he's basically spent all this time talking about how he's like, you know, had more like women clerks than anyone else before, that he had to, preliminarily hire, right, four clerks, right, in case he gets the appointment to the Supreme Court. And he chose to hire all women, which, you know, I think frankly, cynically, right, he did because of these allegations that were coming forward, but we'll put that aside. And then to see that, okay, yeah, that there was such an awareness of the, you know, his issue with women, that you had Amy Chua and her husband basically coaching women about how to dress and how to look and how to perform for him because he had a certain type. So yeah, you know, the one thing my wife and I, we've been talking about for the past couple of days, it's like, you know, especially after yesterday with Kavanaugh's testimony, is like, what's astounding. And this shows you why we're at the, you know, I hope the bankruptcy stage of kind of white male domination, is because how somebody can get forward, get in front of that kind of, you know, and the cameras and the Senate, and basically unleash a tirade and lie through his teeth and just not answer questions, just like dripped of the kind of prep school, super rich, uber privileged, entitled rich white male class that he is from. I mean, that's what it was disgusting.
Yeah.
But so I want to, here's what I just want to just play this bit, and we're just going to try to kind of move through a little bit of this stuff, talk maybe a little bit about where this is going to go from here. But if you didn't get a chance to hear the hearings, right. It's definitely worth it to go back and spend time. Although I'll tell you ahead of time, it's difficult, especially if you're listening to Christine Blasey Ford's testimony. Her testimony was courageous, but difficult, because you can see it. But I think, you know, that's part of the value of kind of understanding what we're actually talking about here. And the Kavanaugh piece was just like, I've never seen anything like that in any kind of Supreme Court nomination. And his opening, like I said before, he had about 4 points that he was coached to, you know, basically respond to everything that was thrown at him and to bring it back to those same things over and over again, even when it didn't quite seem to fit. And you could even see there were some people who were kind of looking at each other, even some of the Republicans, kind of like, what's he saying? But in his opening remarks, he basically laid out, this is what I mean by pulled off the mask about being a political operative. So I want to just play a clip about how he says and his explanation about what these allegations were all about, right? And this is kind of where suddenly you are jumping into like extreme right-wing radio Alex Jones territory when you start kind of saying this as part of your confirmation hearing, right, defending yourself against sexual assault allegations. This is Kavanaugh, a piece of his opening remarks.
This whole 2-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups. This is a circus. The consequences will extend long past my nomination. The consequences will be with us for decades. This grotesque and coordinated character assassination will dissuade competent and good people of all political persuasions from serving our country. And as we all know, in the United States political system of the early 2000s, what goes around comes around.
That's right. He ends that little thing before he flips the page. He ends that with a threat.
No, that whole entire statement, not just that, what comes around goes around. That whole entire statement there was, he's going to do whatever he can to fuck over to the left once he gets on the bench.
Yep.
And you know what? You know, we said it once that Trump was elected. We are heading down the country like Poland is right now, or Turkey, or Hungary, to where these Euro like this a proto fascist, soft fascist state, where we have illegitimate courts, and we're going to have an illegitimate Supreme Court.
Yep.
For the next 50 years, with Kavanaugh sitting on it.
That's absolutely right, and it's going to happen. I mean, you know, I can't remember. I forget
like,
this.
Like we are going to revert back to a time where abortion is going to be illegal in most of the states. You think about like Ireland just voted on legalizing abortion, state-funded abortion too.
Right.
This past year, when they went 30 or 40 years without 30, almost 30 years, 35 years with having it outlawed from the conservatives, like that's where we're heading. We're heading to a point where it might be constitutionally legal. I mean, already is for companies to deny people access to contraception. Yep. Because of their religious beliefs.
Yep.
Like, this is what Kavanaugh is going to enshrine. Like, it's almost like the type of thing, like, yeah, you ask people, you're like, do you want your kids to have access to safe contraception? I mean, in 2018? I mean, like,
yep.
Or do you think that someone, like a court full of religious ideologues should be able to say no. It's an abortion pill, you know, being on contraception.
Well, look,
and so therefore it's illegal.
Yes, and look, I mean, we got to.
I mean, like, if this is sound medicine and science that they're just going to be rolling back.
No, and look, this is the culmination. I mean, we've talked about this relentlessly on this show, right? This is the culmination of a 40-year program, right? And the Supreme Court was like, you know, it has been like the gold ring for the right, right? That's why, you know, that's why Trump, right, has, you know, he's approved more justices to the federal bench, right, than any president before him up to this point in his presidency.
More than Obama, Bush, and Bush combined, or Clinton combined.
Exactly, right? And that's been the agenda. This has been Mitch McConnell's, like, stated agenda, because he's come out of that wing. So it's to kind of take over the court, because now they've effectively, like, they've hollowed out any kind of, like, you know, moderation in the Republican Party and made it this kind of extreme
ultra-nationalistic.
Right. Exactly, right? They've done that. They've been able to kind of gerrymander the kind of our elections to the point where people are questioning the legitimacy of the elections, but now they've got enough majority that they can force through what they want, and which they've done. Let's talk about the $2 trillion tax cut, for example. Perfect example of this. And now, with Kavanaugh, he gets appointed to that. Is like, you've lost any semblance of the Supreme Court being some sort of neutral arbiter. Because you've got a guy who is an overt political operative stating explicitly, talking about conspiratorial, like, you know, readings or understandings of what the hell's going on right now.
And the Republicans
is going to come after the Democrats, basically, come after the left. They're just going to put there. And all it is now is naked power. With Trump at the head of it, like a little freaking cherry on top. Or should we say mushroom?
And the thing is...
couldn't help myself, sorry.
and the thing is, it's like there's going to be a wish list of items that they're going to want to steam right on through during the lame duck session once the blue wave hits.
Yep, you bet. And what's on the table right now is
rolling
going to be
back Social Security, rolling back entitlements, more tax cuts. You know, like,
but the key stuff is right before you're going to have one. There are cases ready to go right now that are going to go after Roe v. Wade. Number one, they're going to go after anything any semblance that's left of the Voter Rights Act. Right. They're going to basically kind of turn back.
Go back to poll taxes and literacy tests.
Exactly. All that stuff is on the table is set for that. They've just been waiting. They got them revved up. They're ready to go.
States rights issue.
Exactly. And that's where we're going there. And in the meantime, so, and Donald Trump is just going to cause all the havoc in the world, right? And the meanwhile, the House, thanks to freaking Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell in the Senate, are they just going to push through the last parts of their agenda? And if you think, oh, no, they won't do that, what's your evidence? What's your evidence that they won't do anything? That this is about naked power plays, plain and simple. And there is no check anymore.
They're going to lose this power.
Yes.
This legislative power in 40, 39 days. They know that power is going to be taken away. And what are they going to do once that power is taken away? Lindsey Graham told Durrell what's going to happen.
Yep.
Once that power is getting taken away.
Exactly.
Yesterday. He told Durrell, like.
Yeah. So listen, I mean, this goes right back to how Sean started things out here today, right? I mean, basically saying, look, things are going to get worse before they get better, if they get better. And that's all going to depend on, like, you know, the Democrats who are elected. Like, thank God for the DSA. Thank God for the iRevolution push. Thank God for the Women's March. Thank God for all the kind of movements.
And you know what's going to happen? As it gets worse, these left movements are going to get stronger and stronger.
Yep.
But with
consequences, right? I mean, that's the problem.
But you know what? The one thing is, it's like you have people out there protesting on the right with helicopters and throwing people out of helicopters.
Right.
I mean, these are that's what the future of the Republican Party wants.
Yep.
The future of the Republican Party wants to throw, you know, leftists out of helicopters and, you know, go to like a Pinochet type model. Like,
right.
These are the people like Identity Europa and all these alt-right groups, these fascist groups that are popping up on the local levels. And, you know, with Republicans going to it, like I was talking to Darrell Lamont Jenkins from One People's Project last year on Identity Europa. And he said, these are the Republicans of the future.
Yep.
And like their future is coming and it's going to be coming soon.
Yep.
And it's going to be about power grab.
Yep. It already is.
Yeah. And people are hoping that like John Roberts moderates himself with the shit show that's been going on with the Kavanaugh stuff.
Yeah.
Which is again like these resistance Democrats like looking for some semblance of fucking centrism that is not existent anymore.
Yeah, I'm sorry, if you ever want to have like a maddening experience, right? About the centrist Democrats, just listen to kind of Morning Edition on NPR for a while. Right. And hear the people that come on and what they're saying. Well, yeah, John Roberts, exactly what you said. I listened to this morning. Like John Roberts, you know, he's going to want to have preserve the integrity of the court by not having a whole lot of 5-4 decisions. I'm like, what fantasy world are you living in that you think that this is as any
like liberalism is going to be a bastion and it's going to come out like a success?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like
our institutions are going to preserve us once they've been hollowed out for 40 years.
Smells like a rose. Right. Put on your glasses and smells like a rose. I don't know, man. Oh, crazy, crazy. So, yeah. So we're a little worked up on this. So I guess
sorry. Take your happy pills.
Yeah, I know, man. Sorry. I was like, well, you know, frankly, I think at least there's a lot of folks that I think were listening to us today. Probably don't. I don't think their happy pills could probably penetrate the wake of what was there yesterday. Just because, I mean, how freaking awful.
You see the train wreck that's coming.
Yeah. Speaking of train wrecks, and I'll say this just kind of briefly, because frankly, you know, I didn't care. It's like Trump was at the UN this week. Like normally this would be a big deal when you've got leaders from around the world laughing at him publicly for making claims that he's been the most successful president in the U.S. history. But now that was just something for Monday or Tuesday, and that's been all washed away by
our news cycle.
Right, exactly. So that was the leader, like international relations people finally getting their head around the fact, like, this guy's just a joke, so why don't we just laugh at him, right? And they did. So there you have it, folks. We have a president who's getting laughed at by the rest of the world. We have a American institutions steadily on the decline and ready to kind of, you know, completely
collapse, crumble.
Collapse. And Sean and I are here to cheer you up. So, hey. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to remind you, if you want to keep this kind of like, you know, big ray of sunshine growing bright, become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/RCPress today. And we're going to be back right after this, and we're going to talk about some positive developments maybe in PA politics. We'll be right back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Would you be willing to stand up in solidarity with your fellow workers, even if it cost you your job? Well, on this day in labor history, the workers at Mersey Docks and Harbour Company in Liverpool, England, answered that question. The year was 1995. 329 Mersey dock workers refused to cross a picket line that was being walked against another company on the docks. The workers at Torside had been fired for protesting against erosions in job security and increasingly unpredictable scheduling. They were speaking out against the casualization of their labor. When the Mersey dock workers would not cross the Torside picket line, they too were fired. Dock workers across the world stood up in solidarity with the Mersey workers against this unjust treatment. They knew if it could happen in Liverpool, it might happen anywhere. Pickets sprung up from Norway to Japan, from Australia to Italy, and into the United States. It was a global outpouring of solidarity. The strike wore on for 850 days. 1 year into the strike, dock workers held an international day of action in support of the Liverpool workers. Finally, 2.5 years after they were fired, the dock workers agreed to a settlement. They did not get their jobs back, but they did get severance pay. A film was made about the struggle. The proceeds were used to purchase a bar in Liverpool. It is known as the Docker's Pub and has become a space for working class organizing. The International Dock Workers Council was also born from this strike. Today, the council has 90,000 members, a lasting movement of solidarity. 20 years after the strike, dock workers from across the world gathered in Liverpool to remember the struggle.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Before we get into this stuff, I just want to let everybody know that Colleen Fitzgerald and I, when we were launching our free range podcast, we just kind of like both kind of went away in August and turns out most of September. But we did meet this past week, and we will be having the newest episode of Free Range coming out this week, coming up, assuming that my digital recorder will be found. Right? So we have that. And the cool thing is we're going to try out a little bit of a different format. We're actually going to be recording in the Uptown Espresso in Kutztown, and we're going to do live recording. So the idea being, if people kind of come in and people sit down, we'll kind of include that as part of the conversation. So look for that this week, the return of Free Range. So Sean, a little case of, campaign jeopardy at stake. Alex, I'll take conflicts of interest for 1,000.
So, before we do that, yes. You know, since we didn't record last week, there's a story I wanted to bring up that I forgot to bring up, put it in the show notes. Speaking about Alex Jones and conspiracy theories, did you see the conspiracy theory that Scott Wagner was talking about at a town hall?
I did not. What happened?
He basically compared undocumented immigrants and Muslims to raccoons, a raccoon infestation in someone's basement. And he read.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did hear about this. Go ahead. Sorry.
And pretty much, I put it like a little question of him being a racist out there, considering that, he has like his Uncle Ruckus down in Philadelphia stumping for him. But, pretty much he's a fucking racist at this point. He basically compared he recanted a highly racist Alex Jones story that was sent to him by this 80-year-old woman, and he didn't know it was from Alex Jones, but he still said the thing. And he pretty much compared you know, all these colored people coming into the country as a raccoon infestation. Which, you know, that like calling a colored person raccoon is not exactly. There's a more explicit term for that, but it's
exactly,
you know, pretty racist. But yep. Thankfully, it seems like his campaign's falling apart, and we won't deal with Scott Wagner that much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, so, we have it. I should say before, okay, one last thing. I said Sean mentioned it too, and I forgot to say this at the top of the show. I'm sorry about what we didn't record last week. It just kind of fell apart. Sean had something he had to do, and I had to have like dental surgery, and I forgot to mention it the week before, and I just whatever, just got overwhelmed and didn't let anybody know about that. So sorry to keep your cupboards bare for the Out to Coop podcast last week's folks. Apologize for that, but you know, we're back. So anyway, Sean, Scott Wagner.
Yes. Scott Wagner is doing something highly unusual. He is investing his campaign donations in the stock market, and he had two significant losses over the past several months. One for $630,000 and another loss for $1.4 million. But, you know, the campaign was trying to say that he netted $800,000 in doing this since the start of the campaign. Usually what happens is that campaigns will put their money into, like, low-risk accounts, right? If, like, you're running for U.S. Senate or you're running for governor, you'll put your money in a low-risk, low-interest account. And pretty much because as that accrues interest – you can then use that money to fund your campaign staff, right? It seems like what Wagner did here was pretty interesting because he like lost $2 million in a non-volatile market. So it begs the question, like, what the fuck is he doing with that money? And why? How did he lose $2 million in such a short period of time investing in the stock market?
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
Yeah, well,
I mean, you got to wash that money somehow.
I'm like, somebody got paid.
Yeah, well, like, so the funny thing is, I actually compared this. So we're talking to someone about this, and it's like Ozark. Have you watched that yet?
I have not watched it yet.
We'll talk about it in the second half, but right. It's like Ozark. And
we'll also talk about the first then too as well. Go ahead.
What's the first?
We'll talk about it later.
but Ozark, it's almost like Ozark where he's like he's washing money, making it clean.
Yeah, so that's exactly. He doesn't even know how to do that right.
Yeah, exactly. Or no, he probably does. Someone had to get paid off.
Yeah, hey,
I'm smart enough to form my own opinions.
There you have it.
And then I guess we should move on to the next Scott Wagner controversy this week.
Oh, wait, there was another one? Wait a minute. Hey, what would a week be without a newspaper full of stories about Scott Wagner just totally messing up?
Well, this had to deal with Wawa.
Oh, man. This ruined my day, man. This ruined my freaking day.
So Wawa gave Scott Wagner $10,000 over the last financial reporting period over the summer, since like April. And $10,000 check from the Wawa pack. And it was actually like $12,500 over the whole campaign cycle. And I put a tweet up. I didn't think it was going to get this much traction. Like, this might have been like the most controversial thing I ever tweeted on my account. Basically said, Wawa supports Scott Wagner, and it showing the thing. And my Twitter account was going off the hook for like 2 days.
Yep.
And a couple of Republicans were saying, well, it's just the Political Action Committee, not Wawa itself, that gave him the money. And to that, I responded, that's why you should support union PACs giving exactly. money to candidates, because it's the same thing, right? It's the members, not the union, giving money to these candidates.
Right.
Because that's how political action committees work. And
exactly.
They didn't get back to me.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. But, you know, as we say this, so I keep on forgetting to ask you. So I don't know if you looked into it. Did Wawa's PAC, did they give any money to the Wolf campaign?
I didn't see any Wolf campaign money. I looked through some of the reports. Billy Pence, they did. But, like, it's the type of thing, like, I mean, most of their money split up evenly between Republicans and Democrats. Like, giving to, like, the person down in Delaware, given to Joe Crowley and stuff like that. I mean, like pretty much like influence peddling their donations are. Mm-hmm. But why are you cutting a $10,000 check this late in the campaign to Scott Wagner's campaign when he's losing by 20 points or 22 points at this point?
Yep, exactly. And yeah. Like, and why do you want to have, you know, your brand of your company associated with racists and to anti-worker folks? What's interesting too, as well, is if you look at, you know, some of the like the wages of Wawa employees, they tend to be a little bit higher than kind of some comparable convenience stores and things like this. They generally get kind of like some good ratings in terms of like places to work for. And why would you want to kind of like associate with a guy who's so clearly anti-worker, right? And disparages people that that work at low wages. I mean, this is kind of like, you know, again, it's such a bad choice in my mind for Wawa. And it's like, I'm telling you, I mean, Wawa has a following, right? I mean, I didn't grow up in Pennsylvania. I didn't grow up in this area. And I have an attachment to Wawa. Right. I mean, it's like on my way, I've got to stop that I'll stop and grab my coffee in the morning on the way. And now this, and I can't stomach it. It's bad stuff. And apparently some of the people on kind of response, because I also retweeted out your thing too, and people were kind of engaged at there too as well, and saying Rutter's, right, is another kind of like chain. They said apparently they also
support, right, Wagner.
Right, support Wagner. To date, I guess yet we don't know.
I think
about
she gave $10,000 to Wolf.
Gave it to Wolf.
Yeah.
So, right? So if you want to play the political convenience card game, folks, you got to go with Sheets.
It's been like a running joke on Twitter for the whole entire campaign season. Fetterman's been posting about Sheets and Wawa. So.
Oh, my God. And here we are. Here we are. So
this is the excitement of a non-exciting, non-competitive race. And latest thing about Wagner. He's getting crushed in Lays at Franklin and Marshall poll, 52-30. Half the state doesn't even know who he is.
There you go. 52-30. Right. So that
and for the record, I don't know if I put it out last week. Okay. So I put my predictions for the election up, right? Uh-huh. So my predictions is Wolf is going to win by like 17 points. Casey's going to win by 17 points. Senate Dems are going to pick up 5 to 6 Senate seats, which would be significant. And the House Dems are going to pick off 15 seats.
All right, there it is. Like, write it down, everybody.
I have this written down on my whiteboard in my like apartment.
Okay, right. Let's give everybody the opportunity. Okay, so run it through nice and slow.
Okay, Wolf will win by 17 points.
17 points for Wolf.
17 for Casey.
17 points for Casey.
The Senate Dems will pick up 5 to 6 seats.
Senate Dems, 5 to 6 seats.
Which will dramatically like impact the majority and really even out the Senate chamber in Pennsylvania.
It's still not give them the majority though, right?
It will still give them the majority, but it will make it like 24-26 or 26-24. Right.
It won't give the Democrats the majority.
No, but it'll be like a 50-50 chamber.
Right. I just want to make sure everybody out there is going to be clear. Sean is not saying that they're going to win back the state Senate, right? Go ahead.
And then House Dems will pick up 15 seats.
15 seats. And so where does that leave the breakdown?
Pretty much like within like 5 to 10 seats.
Still with the Republican majority though.
But it'll be a lot more moderate. And what's significant about those is that it evens out the committee assignments. The committees won't be as lopsided as they are, which will then stop more radical bills from getting through committee. Mm-hmm. And it'll actually like produce somewhat better legislation. But the thing is, it's like Terzai wants to give up all the Republicans in the Southeast to have a more solidly majority caucus in the state of Republican conservatives. So he's willing to give up the moderates, sacrifice them for a stiff conservative, like narrow majority.
Well, there we have it.
So
predictions, everybody.
And so what the way I am coming up with this, just talking to people on the ground out in different parts of the state, who are seeing things as they're unfolding. So in a bunch of internal polls that have been coming into me, you know, hearing them around in Harrisburg and having people tell me about that. First off, Jake Corman, Senate Majority Leader. Mm-hmm. After people were read positives and negatives of Corman, he is tied like 45-45 with his opponent, Ezra Nanes.
So let me ask you this. So when you say internal polling, who's internal polling?
Democratic side.
All right. So take that, take that with a into account. Right. Want to make sure that everyone understands Sean is not trying to kind of like crunch, like kind of like falsify numbers or saying what? No, he fully recognizes the Democratic poll. Right. Okay. Go ahead.
It's forcing, like, this internal poll is actually forcing Corbin to start running TV ads up in Center County, which is pretty early for that. Mm-hmm. And Center County has a huge constituency up there, has one of the largest DSA chapters in the state outside of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which is the Center County DSA, which are mostly Penn State faculty members and people who live and work around State College, which is all in Corbin's district.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, Senate Appropriations Chairman Pat Brown. He is in Allentown. Now, this is key.
This is really key.
Because his district is pretty much a Hillary voter for Clinton by like 10 percentage points. And somehow Pat Brown still keeps on getting by.
Well, he's been able to hold on to it. He's cultivated that whole kind of like moderate, reasonable, kind of listen to Republican, right? So this is the key. Go ahead. Sorry.
But like the thing with Pat Brown is one of the smartest people inside the caucus.
Yes.
He has his faults. They're pretty much out there in public. We're not going to hash them here. He is one of the smartest Republicans in the caucus. He is he's the appropriations chairman. He's a CPA and a tax attorney. So he's pretty much like the only qualified Republican to lead the Senate Appropriations Committee. And he is trailing by 11 points to Mark Pinsley, who is backed by Our Revolution and the Progressive Campaign Committee.
It's freaking unbelievable.
P-triple-C.
It's so awesome.
And what makes this more significant is Susan Wild, who has all of Allentown in her district, in that 7th congressional district, she's starting to pull away double-digit lead over Marty Nystrom, the person she's running against. So if the Susan Wild district, if that district starts pulling away and people come out and vote, what this shows is like pretty much straight ticket punchers are going to be coming out and voting for Susan Wild. And if Allentown has an extremely high turnout, higher than average for an off-year election or a midterm election, Pat Brown's political career is over.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Like, I'm going to go on the record and I'm going to say Pat Brown's going to lose.
Oh, Sean, make it the big move. Going on the record saying Pat Brown is going to lose. Well, and you know, one of my hobby horses.
And why I'm going to say this is because people in Harrisburg are starting to get extremely worried that Pat Brown's going to lose. Because if Pat Brown loses, these lobbyists and people are going to have no one to work with on the Republican side on the appropriations chair. Like, wow. On the appropriations end of things. And if, you know, you're a lobbyist and the moderate Republican who runs the appropriations committee gets knocked out in an election.
You know what that means, guys. That's right.
Well, not exactly. But,
no, but you know what I mean.
I'm also hearing that Terzai's race is a lot tighter.
Really?
Than what it's supposed to be. I mean, it looks like Terzai's going to pull it out, but Emily, he has a really tough challenger. So a lot of these Republicans are really fucking scared at the moment.
Well, this was just heard over in the Pennsylvania GOP headquarters.
That's if they still have a headquarters. And also, I heard Scavello is already starting to run TV ads up where he's at. Mm-hmm. And he's running against Probst, Emily Probst. And Scavello seems like that might be a seat that gets lost.
Wow.
So you think about it. Scavello, again, in Lehigh Valley, northeastern part of the state, going up to like Wyoming Valley, like between, you know, pretty much like Allentown and I guess Scavello's in that between Allentown and like Scranton area. Okay. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's like up in that northeastern part somewhere, like in that corner. You might have a couple of Senate seats that get flipped. And we're not even talking about the seats in Philadelphia area that are in play. And there's going to be one major pickup is going to be out West. Lindsey Williams, she's going to beat Schaefer. Schaefer, Ross Schaefer, I don't know his first name, Jeff Schaefer, he beat Volkovich, who is a more conservative, like moderate Republican, one of those conservatives that you could actually talk to that wasn't nuts. Right. He got primaried out by a completely batshit crazy Republican. And Lindsay Williams, who I think is an AFT organizer or a public school teacher, she is the clear frontrunner in that race. So there's possibly like two solid it's shaping up where there's 4 to 6 Senate seats get flipped in the state Senate.
And that's something. I'm telling you.
You're hearing it here first.
You're here, right here first. There you go. Sean Kitchen is going to be
I'm going to be like Steve Kornacki in a couple of weeks with like the map behind.
I would be totally up for that. And I'm going to say like Sean Kitchen's like career as a kind of like prognosticator was made right here on this day, September 28th, 2018. Right. So when all this stuff comes through.
I have a pretty good
winners. I was about to say, this is not going to be the first time.
Right? I called Ocasio-Cortez as soon as she put that ad out. I was like, yep. She's going to win. Yep. That's it. Like,
well, not just Ocasio-Cortez, but the statewide stuff too as well. You call Summer Lee, right? You call Sarah Inamorato. I mean, you know, call Fiedler, Elizabeth Thief Fiedler, right?
Wolf.
Wolf. Well, yes.
The first time around. No, I mean, like when he was in the primary.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, but, you did. That's true. Yep.
But no, I feel like whatchamacallit. It's so at the press club launch on Monday, Wolf was asked this question about the wave that's coming. He pretty much said, like, I don't know what's out there, but he said something special is truly happening. So he wouldn't get into it, but people are definitely talking about it. People see something that's going to be happening. It's going to be, it's what Terry Madonna said, which shade of blue is it going to be?
Yeah.
Light, medium, or dark?
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'll tell you this, you know, this is, you've heard me on, you know, one of my hobby horses here on this show has always been saying that, look, the Lehigh Valley represents the future of Pennsylvania. And just to kind of go back and re-highlight what you just said, the fact that Pat Brown could lose his seat there and that you've got Susan Wilde and not just lose his seat, right, but lose his seat to a challenger who's like supported by Our Revolution and the PCCC on the one hand, and then Susan Wilde kind of pulling away in her race too as well. That is huge, right? And so this is if the lights aren't going off and you're like, I need to get out and vote this year, kind
it's
of
full
mobile.
Panic mode in the Republican Party.
Yeah, but this is all the more reason
and
make
reason,
sure that you are out there to vote.
There
to
are 63 happen. Million. Really fucking pissed off people from election night 2016 who have been waiting for this day to come.
Yeah, and frankly, you've got this hearing that just took place, the national hearing that just took place with Kavanaugh, right? And to see what's kind of going on there, I think is like reigniting for people who have started to go back into some sense of normality. No, we cannot allow this to happen. Right. And I think that's going to motivate some people to get out there in the polls, especially after yesterday's performance.
And also with the fuck up Scott Wagner has been having, especially the Puerto Rico issue. There was a protest out in the Lehigh Valley last week or like Reading. Well, in Reading. So outside of Pat Brown's district, but basically, on the Hurricane Maria vigil, people had signs made up that said Scott Wagner hates Puerto Ricans.
There you go.
So, I mean, this is that message got to people.
Indeed. All right, so I know Sean's got some place to go, so I want to kind of – I'll just say a couple of quick things here that we'll kind of head on our way out for. One, just a kind of the latest update on the kind of mold and unhealthy building conditions at Kutztown University. yesterday, in front of Lytle Hall is the building that I teach in, that you've been following stuff on Raging Chicken, our Facebook page, and all that kind of stuff. You've seen the pictures, the moldy tiles, and kind of an administration that kind of continues to kind of really recognize and respond to the you know, unhealthy working conditions of, say, black mold and a range of other things in the building. We just had exterminators had to come in the building for several days because it was infested with yellow jackets. At least three faculty members were stung, right? Students were stung. The assistant chair of the English department just a couple days ago was stung, right? And then so
EpiPens for everyone.
Yeah, you'll love this. So one of the first rounds of attempts to get rid of them. Yes, exactly. Hashtag EpiPen.
Salt Bay.
Exactly. So we have one of the offices that was infested with the yellow jackets. They went in with these super powerful pesticides and kind of blew them out. Pesticides were so strong they actually killed the mice that were living up in there, right? The mice ended up dying, right? And then turning into rot. Right. And therefore, the stench was kind of going down. Now, if you remember 2 years ago in 2016, that Mike Gambone from the history department there, where I've talked about on the show before, he built a Lytle Hall stenchometer after the last time there were dead rodents that the administration refused to acknowledge.
Did the stenchometer come back?
It came back. Right. And so yesterday the stenchometer was out there at the tables, and he's got the, you know, it's an updated one. So it's got the, you know, the big little with a big pink blowout stuff on it that says now with 10% more wasps, right? You know, and stuff like this. So faculty were out there talking with students and other faculty members about what's happened with Lytle. And then Amy Lynch Biniak, who basically really spearheaded this, she is the secretary of the local union. Because spearheaded this and had people come and kind of fill out index cards, right, describing what their experiences were in Lytle Hall over the years. And that she got a whole stack of those cards and is bringing them over to the administration once again. And it's this kind of, and this is only the beginning, right? Now, the administration is basically on full on PR mode, trying to kind of say, no, we're doing everything we can, like to the point where in my 8 a.m. class yesterday, right, they were up right above my classroom, which I can't but help take that personally. But 8 a.m. kind of repairing the roof, right? Which has been supposedly repaired twice now over the past two summers. But so it was like, we're going into my my writing for social media class, and you know, we're going in there and you hear, there's literally a crane going on outside the window, right, to fix this stuff, because now they're in full on panic mode because things are just, it's not working. So
and now you're using the Smash Lab to highlight the effectiveness of the KU Mold Hunters.
Exactly. So KU Mold Hunters, there's two social media accounts that are out there now that if you're interested in following, look, I just encourage you to go out there and at least follow KU Mold Hunter, KU Mold Hunter on Twitter, right? Follow us on Twitter you kind of like give your comments. If you have any association with any Pasha University, follow that and talk about your conditions, your health conditions in your buildings there. So that's been a kind of a really cool avenue to get some kind of this out and to continue the pressure upon the administration to do the right thing, right? There's also a Facebook page, right? Also for KU Mold Hunter. So look it up, like it, join in, and keep it going. So I've got a lot more to tell you about it. I want to get back next week, maybe, to talk about what Senator Eichelberger has been up with, trying to kind of turn Pasha into a technical colleges. But we'll get to that somehow next week when we got a little bit more time.
We'll be coming back. He's gone.
Yeah. But we'll see where this legislation ends up. But this is kind of interesting. Well, whatever. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney. Oh, and I should say, shout out to all my kind of Abscuff brothers and sisters who are out at the Legislative Assembly this weekend. I want to encourage you, and if you're listening to this podcast and you're an Abscuff member and you're at Legislative Assembly, I want you to encourage every other Abscuff members there who's trying to build a kind of ground-up movement to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. You want to know how you can help? You want to have media that is going to support the union movement? You want a media that is actually going to help defend higher education? When you have media that's going to help elect progressive kind of pull no punches legislators to take back the state of Pennsylvania as well as the nation, right? Well, we're there to be part of that movement. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member as little as $5 a month. You got 200 people out at Legislative Assembly. Even if you get a quarter of people that join Raging Chicken Press, that would put us in a fighting chance to really have an impact in this next legislative round. So anyways, that's my pitch to my brothers and sisters in the union. In the meantime, we're going to get ready to come back to today's last call and, you know, talk a little bit of beer and talk a little bit of space and see what other fun things we have on there. And then we'll send Sean on his way to join the protests. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will talk to you in a minute. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody. It's Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Last call. Here we are. We're going to do a little abbreviated session today, folks. This is usually, for those of you who are brand new to the podcast, this is where we talk beer, we talk space news, and kind of anything else that's kind of like, just for fun. So I'll get my space news out of the way right away. There's a whole bunch of really cool stuff that happened this week. But frankly, after yesterday's hearing with the Kavanaugh hearing and stuff like that, I'm too exhausted to go through it all. And plus, we're a little bit pressed for time. So I'll leave you this one thing. Well, two things. One thing is that Japan just landed these probes on an asteroid. This represents the first time in human history that probes have been landed on the asteroid. And it's just an absolute fascinating move. And so basically, they've got this spaceship that had kind of gone out, kind of got up to the point where it was, matching speed with the asteroid, and it dropped these two very small, like I think they're only a couple pounds apiece, little small square probes down to the asteroid. And it was fascinating. They sent back pictures. They were unsure if they were actually made it, and then the pictures came back. So we've got actually the first time ever these probes land down there. And because of the limited gravity on the asteroids, is that instead of roving, right, because if they rove, they'd actually just fly off into space. So they have these like little things that like flip that just kind of pop them up, and they just kind of basically hop around the planet. So or around the asteroid. And why this matters, like number one, just like holy crap, in human history this has happened. Number two, asteroid mining is now in the works, right? This is kind of part of that other dynamic, which I've been talking about extensively on this show. So that was really cool. And what was the bonus? This is the second thing. North Penn High School, I guess. North Penn High School, they have a planetarium there. Did you ever go there, Sean?
Where?
Like the North Penn Planetarium?
No, I have not.
Because I know that some schools and some high schools and stuff, they would kind of like have trips that would go there.
I've been to the Franklin Institute a couple of times.
Yeah. Franklin Institute rocks. But this one is like, a high school. What's that?
I grew up in Philly, so.
No, I know. But this is one of the major planetariums in the area. That's why I was asking, right? And it's down, and North Penn is down by Lansdale. So they have groups of kids that kind of come up all the time. So I'm just saying. So not, I don't mean to trample on your Philly cred by kind of even suggesting that you might go to North Penn High School for a planetarium. Excuse me. No, but the idea there, so we went there, they have these programs, right? These, these programs, like very, very low cost programs at the planetarium, once a month on a Monday night. And this past week was the first one. We're taking our, my wife and I are taking our kids there, for each one of these things, on Monday nights, throughout, I don't know, six months or so. And, I had already shown my kids pictures of of the asteroid, right? Of these probes that had dropped down. And so we're sitting there just kind of getting ready for the show to start. And this is awesome guy who runs the show. He's a teacher there at North Bend High School. Just phenomenal job. Great program. Anyways, so we're getting ready to start, as people start coming in, they just got a whole series of images that are cycling through up on there. And my daughter looks up and says, "That's the asteroid." And his first question, of course, was like, brings that picture up as the show, as the program starts. And he says, "Anybody know what this is?" And my daughter's beaming, right? Because she knows what it is. It's the asteroid. And like, we're such geeks, right? So there's that. So that's my space news for the week. We've got a lot more coming on next week. And maybe even next week we'll talk a little bit about Elon Musk being brought up on fraud charges, which is really fun. Great article out there about with the need to nationalize Elon Musk, which I'm game. I'm game.
Yes.
So the other thing I put beer news this week and free will. It's actually a big weekend for free will. Tomorrow, Saturday, is their, I think it's their first ever, Saison Saturday. You remember we've talked about their sour Sundays, but this is the first Saison Saturday, I believe. And that's a company that's all day tomorrow, right, from 12 to whatever, 9 or something. And what's amazing about it is that they're also accompanying that with bottle releases of some Saisons that they've been playing around with. So they're going to have, I'll give you a little read of it, right? So basically, here's their intro to it. During much of the late spring and early summer, you may have caught some of the adventures in sourcing and picking wildflowers from the local land in and around the brewery. Each of the flower varieties we chose, chamomile, dandelion, honeysuckle, and lavender, were then added to their own single barrel of aging Brett Saison, with the idea of creating a project that displays soft, earthy, complex herbal flavors and aromas while remaining balanced and fresh. So the four bottles that they'll be having out there are going to be the barrel-aged flowers chamomile, barrel-aged flowers dandelion, and honeysuckle and lavender. Those will be available at the brewery on tomorrow. There's also a new can release that will come out tomorrow as well, and that is called the Sweet and Sticky. It is a tropical popsicle double IPA. The tropical popsicle is something that they came out with a while ago. This is their latest release of this. And just to give you a little bit of a taste of that, the Tropical Popsicle Double IPA was inspired by a love of salsa music, summer, and sipping ice fruit-filled cocktails on a remote beach. So if you want to basically say, you know, this is the way we should take the summer out, this is a great beer. Go check out Sweet and Sticky. That's available in cans at both locations in 4-packs. So that's my quick blow-through of some of the cool stuff that's going on. Next week, I'll tell you a little bit about the upcoming Oktoberfest at Free Will and maybe some stuff that's happening up at Saucony Creek, too, as well. But, Sean, what's going on, man? Anything you got there for the good of the order and the fun of the last call?
I am about to go out to a Brett Kavanaugh protest at 12 o'clock, high noon, outside of the building and the federal building in Harrisburg. So
there you go, man. So, I assume you're taking your camera.
Yeah. You assumed correctly. I got some really awesome pictures this week. On Monday, survivors from the Catholic Church abuse scandal, were marching up, from around like, it was just a really busy day in the Capitol. It was busier than like the budget days almost. Got a few good photos this week. There was a mariachi band in the Capitol on Wednesday playing.
I love those pics. I saw those. That was cool.
I got a picture of Sean Dougherty, who is the one of the survivors from the Catholic Church abuse scandal. He's been like the main guy out in front center of everything in the national news outlets on CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, Democracy Now. He was leading a march of protesters to the Capitol from City Island. They went by Long and Nyquist, which is one of the lobbying firms that's standing up for the Catholic Church. Also, that lobbying firm, one of their top lobbyists is married to Joe Scarnati's top staffer, chief of staff, Drew Crompton. And Scarnati is one of the people that said, we will not be voting on concurrence to protect the sexual abuse survivors of the Catholic Church scandal that's going on. So,
boom, 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 boom.
The swamp, there's the swamp needs some draining out here in Harrisburg.
Yeah, it does indeed. What was that?
That was a street cleaner going by.
Look, it almost sounded like a laugh track. That was like, crazy. Like right as you closed out, I'm like, he's got like a laugh track. How'd you get the soundboard over there?
my air conditioner is out, and all my windows are now open. And today's street cleaning day. Out here in Harrisburg, so I had to like get up at 7:30 and move my car to a different side street because I can't park on the other side of this street.
Yeah. You know, there you go. Well, hey everybody, I know Sean's got to get out to get out the action. Look for later for some photos that he will no doubt post on our Facebook page, on his Instagram site. Check it out. And our message today for the Pennsylvania GOP is the following.
Go play with your spidget, Finner.
And we'll be sure to kick you on the way out. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for coming back. And thank you, as always, for supporting Raging Chicken Press. Remember, if you're not already a member, you become a member by going to RagingChickenPress.org, looking for the stuff there, or simply just go to Patreon.com/RC Press today. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back next week. It'll be October, everybody. Libras in the house. We're out of here, everyone. See ya!
We drank beer. He had one beer at the party and had beers with. And having some beers with friends, or just to meet up and have some beers. Drinking beer, which I gladly do. I like
you
beer.
For that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is
Senator, what do you like to drink?